We continue to work through this text of Scripture together. First Corinthians chapter 13. Now, I suppose that one of the earliest social rules that children learn is that there's something called rudeness. I think I remember early on my mom telling me very often, "Now that's rude," or "Don't be rude." When I did something that was rude, she would comment to me, "Don't be rude." If there was something that she wanted to point out in teaching me that that is an example of rudeness, it came back, "That's rude." So as a child, I remember very, very vividly that there are certain things that you just don't do because they are rude. So for example, you don't talk with your mouth full of food because that's rude, that's right. And you don't chew with your mouth open because that too is rude. And you don't interrupt people. I remember my mom telling me often, the children are to be seen and not heard, because when they are heard, most often it's rude. Don't interrupt people. And she would teach my sister and me, always, 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 say thank you. Say thank you. Say thank you. Because to receive a gift, to have a compliment given to you, to have something done for you, and not to respond with a word of thanks is, of course, very, very rude. That's right. And it's one of the things that we learned very early on. And I am sure that every one of you parents have somewhere along the line with your children taught them not to be rude. And there's plenty of opportunity for that when you have children. The reality is there's plenty of opportunity for all of us. And the reality also is this, that while there may be social taboos that we in our culture are to avoid because they are rude, it is more than that. The Bible speaks to this issue. And let's consider it. It's one of the qualities which are here in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. The Bible says in verse 5, supplying the word love, love does not behave rudely. All right, let's do a little bit of review. What should you know by now? By now, you should know that verses 1 to 3 in this text teach the priority of love. You should know that. By now, you should know that there are a number of qualities which are given to us here in verse 4. Two of them are positive. Three of the qualities which define love are negative. And you'll remember that all of the qualities are verbal forms, as opposed to adjectival. It's not as saying that there is a love that is this kind of love, but instead it is a love that acts in a certain way. And so we came away with this with a priority of thinking that love does something. It is an action. It is, in fact, an activity. And one of those activities is this, that it does not behave rudely. It's interesting to look at how the other translations use this particular, how they translate this particular verse. So if you have a New International Version in your hands tonight, it translates it this way. It, speaking of love, is not rude. The King James puts it this way. It doth not behave itself unseemly. And the New American Standard then puts it this way. It does not act unseemly. Becomingly. Well, what does it mean? When the scriptures here say that love is not those things, what does it mean? The word that's translated here that way in our text, in this particular text, in our New King James, not behave rudely, occurs only one other time in the New Testament. Let me show you that word, and I think that'll give us an idea of what the word means. It occurs in the same book, but it's in chapter 7. So let's go back to chapter 7 and see how it is that the Apostle Paul uses the word here in chapter 13 and verse 5, how he does back in chapter 7, and really then in verse 36. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 is a very, very interesting chapter. Frankly, it is a chapter which is met with great controversy. It talks about the propriety of intimacy within human relationships, and that it is reserved for an individual man and an individual woman within the framework of marriage. And from there, the Apostle Paul goes on to talk about divorce and remarriage. And from there, he goes on to talk about singleness and what he views as himself being a single man, as the benefits of being a single man as it relates to ministry, and how a single man or a single woman does not have to care for the things of this world, he says. So for a man, the cares of having a wife and a family, the responsibilities that go along with that, or for a woman, the responsibilities that go along with having a husband and a family. So the Apostle Paul even says, I wish that all men were as I, that they didn't have extra responsibilities, that they could simply and completely and wholly devote their attention to the ministry. And then he goes to a part of this text which may even be more controversial than what he teaches on divorce and remarriage. You say, what could be more controversial than that? The Apostle Paul talks about the prerogative of a father to have authority over his daughter's marriage. That is, whether or not she should even have one. Not just who she marries, but whether or not she should marry at all. You say, does the Bible say that? That's what Paul says here in this text. Well, let's read it together so you don't just have to simply take my word for it. All right? In verse 34, he says this, there is a difference between a wife and a virgin. And nearly all Bible translators or Bible commentators take that word virgin and apply it to a daughter. There is a difference between a wife and a daughter. The unmarried woman carries about the things of the Lord that she may be holy both in body and spirit, but she who is married cares about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And this I say for your own profit, not that I may put a leash on you, but for what is proper, and that you may serve the Lord without distraction. So here's a father. Now we're going to go to verse 36. Here's a father who says this, so that my daughter can serve the Lord without distraction, I desire that she remain unmarried. Verse 36. But if any man thinks he is behaving improperly toward his virgin, toward his daughter, if she is past the flower of her youth, and that it must be, let him do what he wishes. Let him do what he wishes. Not her. Not let her do what she wishes. Let him do what he wishes. What are the two options? That his daughter would remain unmarried, or that she could marry. Those are the two options. Let him make his choice. Either way, the end of verse 36, he does not sin. Let them marry. Okay, now, I don't want to go back on that this evening and preach to our men and to our daughters about the responsibilities of the father and the children in that situation, but I want to show you the word that's translated exactly the same here, or the word that is translated here that's exactly the same in verse 5 of 13. What word do you think it is? Okay, verse 36. But if any man thinks he is, here it is, behaving improperly. All right, so now we have an example of it. It's translated rude in verse 5. We have an example of it here. And the idea is this. Here is a father who does not think that he is doing right by his daughter. His actions are not right toward her. There's nothing immoral about them, but he chooses to treat her in a different way, because the improper way for his particular daughter would be withholding marriage from her. So he wishes to act properly toward her by giving marriage to her. That's the word. Still, maybe we're struggling a little bit to understand what it means in verse 5 when the scriptures say that love is not rude. Well, there are plenty of examples in the Corinthian church of when their rudeness is on display. Like when? Well, in chapter 11, verse 21, it's on display. Let's just take a look real quick and see what chapter 11, verse 21 says. Ignore for the moment the context, just for a moment. Set aside the context and what you think you might know about 1 Corinthians chapter 11, and just look at verse 21. For in eating, each one takes his own supper ahead of others, and one is hungry and another is drunk. And you, if you just knew that verse, you would say, whoever's doing that, those people are rude. Because you know that, right? Doesn't your mom say, didn't your mom used to say to you when you had guests in your home, don't you with your children, when you have guests in your home, don't you say something like, allow our guests to eat first? Don't you say that? Let our guests have first choice. Because to do otherwise is rude. Well, in this particular context, it does occur around the Lord's table, and they were acting rudely to each other as it related to the Lord's table. In chapter 14 and verse 40, the Corinthian believers used their opportunity, their gifts as it related to tongues, and they used it in such a way that in worship services, really, it was very disorderly, because one was speaking over at the top of another. So one person would stand up and say that he was speaking in an unknown tongue, and he would give his declaration, and no sooner had he sat down than another would stand up and top him, acting rudely, or maybe even speaking at the same time when he was. There are plenty of examples in this. And I would remind you that 1 Corinthians chapter 13 is a text that is about practice in the church. And remember that when the Apostle Paul is talking about love in this text, that the secondary application is within personal relationships, like in our families, or in our marriages, or in our work setting. But the primary application is within the church. And what we find out here is this, that love moderates behavior between parties within the church. But maybe we're still having a little bit of difficulty defining what it means to be rude. Think about it just a second. There's an author by the name of Nancy Friedman. And Nancy Friedman is a politeness author. She tells you how to be polite in different kinds of situations. She's nicknamed the telephone doctor, so that you learn good practices on the telephone. And she'll teach you how to be polite and kind. And you hope that everyone you talk to gets to talk to Nancy Friedman because of what she will teach them. And she makes this point, and I think it is an accurate Bible point, though I don't know that she is a believer. I think the truth of the matter is, when it comes to rudeness, that often the offended party, Friedman writes, is the sole judge of whether something is rude or not. Let's go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and think about that for just a second. The Apostle Paul there notes the man who thinks himself acting improperly toward his daughter. But I have a question. What if he has more than one daughter? Better still, what if those daughters are twins? And to one of the daughters, he exercises his authority to withhold from her And to the other daughter, he exercises his authority to give to her. Now what? Is he acting rudely to both of them? To either of them? The point is this. As Friedman says, the offended party is the sole judge of whether something is rude or not. Let me put this in an illustration for you. Dale and I were talking some weeks ago about one of the ladies that he worked with a number of years ago who was from New York City. And she went down, she's a FedEx employee, lives, works, plays, does everything in New York City. She's a Metro girl way up in the New York City. And she got called down to Memphis, Tennessee to handle a problem. From New York City to Memphis. And Dale told me that she finished her conference with the people there or whatever it was that they were doing. And one of the individuals, I don't know, a supervisor, a manager, or whatever it was, said about this particular woman that he was going to respond with a letter of reprimand, something along that line. And the lady was totally taken back by that. And when she questioned as to why it was, what possibly did she do wrong? She found out real fast that there are certain things that New Yorkers can say to New Yorkers that New Yorkers cannot say to people who live in Memphis because it is rude. Let me give you an example. There are some of you here this evening who, if I started making light of girls' ice hockey, it would take you that long to become very, very, very offended at such talk. And if you're from South St. Paul, where their hockey team, their girls' hockey team, has been state champions, if I have it correct, 2 out of the last 3 years, you might be highly offended to that. But if I take my conversation to go down to Texas, and I'm talking to a couple of guys down in Texas, and I say, you want to hear of some really, really goofy sport? Girls ice hockey. Now there's a goofy sport. Those guys wouldn't be offended by that at all. If I started talking with some of you Minnesotans about a wonderful, wonderful meal, I'm sure, though I have never had it, called lutefisk, and as you describe lutefisk to me, and I say to you, no, I have never heard of a more disgusting, of a more tasteless, of a more repulsive meal than lutefisk. You might become highly offended. I can see on your faces right now you're highly offended. And I've not even said that. I'm totally using illustration. But you're offended by my communication. Now if I take that, and oh, what do you say? You want to go? Let's go to Phoenix. I go to Phoenix, and I'm talking with some of the people in Phoenix, and maybe we take a trip up to the Grand Canyon. We're standing around the rim of the Grand Canyon, just making small talk, and say, you know, I used to live in Minnesota. And you know those people in Minnesota, they eat some funny stuff. They eat something called lutefisk. We talk about that. We laugh about it. No one there would be offended by my comments. It does seem that the offended party is the sole judge. Well, maybe you're still not convinced. Jamie isn't here tonight, so I could talk about her dad. Her dad isn't here. Jamie Carafino, her mom and dad were on our youth staff in Michigan. And we had all of our youth staff over for dinner one night. And we had big spread out on the table, you know, with lots of chips and dip and all that kind of stuff. And Jamie's dad is a very kind guy and big personality, very jovial. And we just started to eat our meal. And his name is Jim. And Jim took a salsa chip, dipped it in the salsa. No one had eaten anything. No one had had a chip at all. Jim takes the first one, dips it in the salsa, takes a bite, continues with his conversation, takes his half-eaten chip and dipped it back in the salsa again and ate it again. And one of our ladies, a rather polite and proper woman, Jim, you double dipped. Now, you know what? My children could care less about double dipping. They don't care. They don't care at all. They don't care if I do it. They don't care if you do it. They don't care if their friends do it. They don't care if they eat their friends' chips that have already been half eaten. They don't care. And I'm sure your children don't either, right? No. They don't care. Because the point, again, is this, is that the offended party is the sole judge of whether something is rude or not. And this is crucially important. Because here's what we like to say. We like to hide behind stuff and say, well, I didn't mean anything by that. Or we like to say something like, don't be so thin-skinned. Or we like to say stuff like, can't you take a joke? Those are the kinds of comments that we like to offer. And the scriptures here tell us that that kind of behavior is moderated by love. Friedman has done a whole study on this particular idea of rudeness. And what she has done is she's made a little chart. And on her chart, she has rudeness that is done by omission, that is, you forgot to do something. Or rudeness that is done by commission, you actually did something. And then she has on the other side, accidental and intentional. So for example, she puts it this way. There's something called accidental rudeness by omission, like forgetting to RSVP to a function or a meeting. All right, you got an invitation to come to the family fellowship at our home. Someone extended that invitation to you, and this is the RSVP by a certain date, but you forgot to do that. Is it rude not to respond? Yes, it's rude. But it was accidental, and it was something that was done out of omission. She goes on to say there's something that's called accidental rudeness by commission. My friend Jim, what he did, that was accidental rudeness by commission. Jim didn't intend to offend anybody that day. He had no intention of doing it. It was just Jim being Jim. And he probably thought he was in his own house, caught up in the moment of the conversation, dipped in, took a bite, dipped in, took a second bite, and we all didn't eat the salsa the rest of the night. So there you go. There's a third kind, and that is this. She goes on to say there's intentional rudeness by omission. You intended to do something. Like what? Like purposely leaving a mess, with the intent that somebody else would have to clean it up. You know what it's like? And forgive me for being crass. It really, really bothers me when people walk their dogs in my front yard and are intentionally rude by commission. You know what I'm saying? That bothers me. There's a fourth one. And that was omission. And the fourth one is commission. Intentionally rude by commission. In other words, here's what happens. This is rudeness that's delivered on person and on purpose and caused by an action one takes. And I think that is what Paul is talking about here in 13:5. He's talking about people who are intentionally rude by the actions they take. And we base that on what verse 4 says. Does not parade itself, is not puffed up. When is a person intentionally rude? When they think of themselves in the manner of verse 4, which we've already worked on. That's when they are intentionally rude. And there is great opportunity for this to occur within the body of believers. There's great opportunity for this to occur. It often takes the form of speaking one's mind. You know, I just believe in speaking my mind. Well, maybe you should believe something differently. Because maybe it is that your mind is puffed up and it desires to parade itself, and therefore it comes out as rudeness. Or maybe it is that someone says, well, you know, I've earned the right to do this thing. It doesn't matter if anybody else likes it or not. I've earned the right to do that. Well, maybe you ought to think about that. Because maybe that too is based in the puffiness of your own person in verse 4 and the parading of your own person in verse 4. Maybe you should think about that. There's plenty of opportunity for rudeness within the body of believers. But I do want to take this evening, and I want to come back and really focus tonight on the secondary part of the application. And I want to bring our attention to relationships and talk about the special temptation that occurs within relationships. So let me deal with it this way. I think it is a special temptation first to men to be rude. How so? Let me show you two texts, men. Let's take in our Bibles and let's turn to 1 Peter chapter 3 and let's see where there is a special temptation to men to be rude. 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 to 6 deal with a wife's role within a marriage. Verse 7 deals with a part of the husband's role as it relates to his wife. And here's what he says. Husbands, likewise, dwell with them, that's your wife. Dwell with your wives with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. I'm not sure why it is, but it would appear that there is a special temptation for men to treat their wives in such a way that it is rude. It does not, as this text says, give honor to her. And it's a special temptation, men. And this is the reality. Don't you men know this? That the longer you have been married, the easier it is to be rude to your wife. You say, what do you mean? Well, let me ask you something, fellas. Can you remember an occasion within the last few weeks where you spoke to your wife in such a way that you never would have spoken to her before you were married? There's a special temptation that seems to come to men who do not wish to dwell with her with understanding. Understanding her strengths, her weaknesses, her idiosyncrasies, her quirks, her behaviors. And instead of loving her despite all of those things, choose to dishonor her by his words to her. There's a special temptation here. There's a special temptation to men as it relates to children. Let me show you one other text, men. And this, of course, is back in Ephesians chapter 6. And in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, the Apostle Paul admonishes fathers. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. How would a father provoke his child to wrath? Well, let's take the example in 7:36 by behaving improperly toward them. And men, those of us who still have children at home, you and I both know that there is a special temptation for us men to behave improperly toward our children, to speak to them in harsh tones, to require of them what they are not physically capable of doing, to become frustrated or angry with them when we give them a task that they are responsible to do, but their minds or their bodies are not mature enough to do the task, and then when they don't complete the task as we think it should be completed, there is a special temptation that comes to fathers to respond to those children in a way that is rude. What overcomes that, men? Love. Love will withhold that sinful behavior to that child. Love will withhold that sinful behavior to a wife. There's a special temptation as it relates to women. Our time is going, so let me just give these to you quickly. A special temptation as it relates to women. Isn't it interesting that the scriptures use a phrase called old wives' tales? Isn't that interesting? Why would the scripture use such a phrase? Because it does seem, while men are more than capable and more than can hold their own in speaking about other individuals, ladies, with all due respect to you, there does appear to be a special temptation to women to be rude in their conversation and in their communication about others. You see, sometimes it seems it's more like this, that men are given, they'll just let a wife have it. Or they will just let a child have it. Women have learned how to do something differently. They may not respond that way to their husbands, but they will respond to other women that way about their husbands. And they may not respond in such a way to their own children directly, but they will respond to other people about their children. Or they may not respond to their friend in such a way, but they will respond to other people about a woman that they happen to know. It seems that there's a special temptation here. There's a special temptation as it relates to children. How so? The book of Proverbs warns children about the eye that mocks, or about the tongue that responds sarcastically to a parent. What does a mocking eye look like? I remember my mom telling me about it. She never said to me, "Stop that mocking eye." She didn't say that. But she would tell me something like this, "Don't roll your eyes at me." Or she would say to me, "Don't give me that look." There is a special temptation for children toward parents. Young men, young ladies, what will conquer that temptation? The love that is described in 1 Corinthians 13, that is selfless, that is not puffed up, that is kind, that is not envious, that does not parade itself. In all of these situations, it is this agape love that eliminates the display of rudeness. It is this agape love that changes the heart. Somebody says, "Well, are you telling me that I should change who I am?" And I would say yes. But I would tell you, my friends, that God is the one who tells you that. There are two scriptures as I was poring over this week that just came to my mind. One of them is this. Someone who looks like what 1 Corinthians 13:5 says practices this Bible truth. Wise as serpents, harmless as doves. I want to ask you a question.